This is Fresh Air. I'm Renee Montaigne. My guest today is anthropologist Tudor Parfit, author of Journey to the Vanished City, The Search for a Lost Tribe of Israel. Tudor Parfit remembers as a boy in England being entranced by the legend of King Solomon's Mines, his mythical palace in southern Africa, the African Queen Sheba. Tudor Parfit finally traveled to Africa to write a book about the Falashas. The Falashas had long called themselves the Jews of Ethiopia, and in 1984-85, they were finally repatriated to Israel in a massive airlift called Operation Moses. A few years later, Tudor Parfit would use DNA to help prove the claims of a different tribe, Southern Africa's Lemba people. It all began when he found himself at a university in Johannesburg delivering a paper on the Falashas, when he noticed at the back of the hall a small group of black men wearing yarmulkes.
Yeah, they said, we're black Jews. We're just like the Ethiopian Jews that you've been telling us about. They said that they'd seen my book on the Ethiopian Jews. They'd read it. And having learnt something about them from the book, they realized that they were the same. And they assumed, therefore, that they must have been from Ethiopia. And they saw my disbelieving look and felt rather upset by that. And they asked me to come and spend the weekend with them in their villages in northern South Africa, in what was then Venderland. And this I did, and at the end of this weekend, I was pretty sure they hadn't come from Ethiopia, but I was equally sure in some way that the range of practices that they had and the range of beliefs that they had, the particularly sharp historical traditions that they adhered to, seemed to suggest something quite substantially Semitic and specifically Semitic.
That day and in the next few days when you went and visited some other Lemba in Soweto, what did they put forward to you as evidence of their heritage?
Well, it was rather sort of seeing them in the little villages, seeing the kind of obsessions that they had about a form of kashrut, you know, Jewish ritual food concerns, questions of simply not eating a whole variety of different animals, which is a completely un-African thing.
For instance, they wouldn't eat pork or even hippopotamus, right?
Because yes, the hippopotamus was never on the menu for them, and this was jolly unusual, clearly in a place where food is at a premium and famine a practically yearly occurrence.
And why hippopotamus?
Because anything that was considered to be pig-like, and so the hippopotamus as well as various other animals like the warthog and other things like that were considered to be pig-like. Anything that was pig-like was not eaten, and indeed at a certain point was punishable by death. So any young Lembas that went off and killed pig of a weekend, as one might, were put to death as a result.
And what else? What else? So food prohibitions that were unusual in Africa, but very parallel to Jewish food prohibitions.
Yeah, then things like the way that they buried their dead, or, if you like, spiritual concerns with the nature of God, an absolute form of monotheism in Central Africa. A kind of similar interest with ancestors. Well, ancestors, of course, is a very African thing, but there's a specific mention in their list of ancestors with Jewish ancestors, or at least with biblical ancestors. I suppose the other thing was the fact that the tribe was subdivided into 12 sub-clans, and some of these sub-clans had names which were absolutely and undeniably Semitic in origin, such as the tribe that was called Hamisi or the tribe that was called Sadiki. These are simply not Bantu words, and they have got, you know, cognate expressions both in Hebrew and Arabic. So these things were quite obviously Semitic.
And they had a legend of their origin that took them back to Israel, in a sense, or some place that they thought was near Israel.
Yeah, they didn't know where it was, but the legend took them back to this place called Sena, which was in the north. And so the legend that I kept hearing repeated time and time again was that we came from Sena, we crossed Pusela, we came to the coast of Africa, the east coast of Africa, and we rebuilt Sena, and then we moved inland and built a great stone city, And there we broke the law of God by eating mice, which, as you know, are not famously considered to be kosher. And we were scattered among the Gentiles. That was the way that they put it, and that was the vocabulary that they used. And
so intriguing, but not, you know, pretty slim evidence for anything.
Oh, totally, yes.
So, okay, next step, what? Where did you go from there?
Well, you see, the idea was to, well, a few things I really wanted to do. I wanted to write a good travel book. There are a lot of good travel books being, you know, written at the time in England, and so my plan was to write one myself. And so, in a sense, the journey was a literary journey. You know, I was happy to be with these people, following their oral traditions wherever they took me, and it would have been a great bonus if I'd found anything at the end of it. But at the same time, I'm a scientist and an academic, and what I wanted this to be was a well-written book, which actually proved something, and very much in the way of 19th century travel books by people like, you know, Richard Burton and Speke and all these great African and Middle Eastern travellers, which was in a way kind of pretty unlikely towards the end of the 20th century to find something that could be solved by a journey and solved through the medium of literary writing, if you like.
What it allowed you to do then was to take a journey through this sort of these different cultures, or this one culture, but from different, you know, points along the way. And, well, for instance, when you left Soweto, you ended up in a northern part of South Africa known as Venda. And these are different people. The Venda is a different group from the Lemba. But you ran into a lot of Afrikaners who had settled in that area 170 years ago. And they, too, believed the Lemba were Jewish.
I was very, very, very amazed to discover that the, you know, that the Boers, particularly in the northern part of what was then the Transvaal, had any knowledge of the Lemba, but they certainly did. And I learned some quite interesting things about the Lemba from them. Indeed, I think that one of the very first people to identify the Lemba as Jews was a Boer leader himself, Kruger. And, you know, the Lemba had worked on their farms and they'd observed their customs and they'd listened to their stories. And even though the story never really kind of got out into the wider South African society, still in certain pockets in the north of the Transvaal, people still talked about it.
I'm speaking with Tudor Parfit, who is the author of the book Journey to the Vanished City, The Search for the Lost Tribe of Israel. The Lost Tribe of Israel, the notion of Lost Tribes of Israel, is quite an intriguing one. Did the Lemba claim to be a lost tribe?
They have latterly claimed to be a lost tribe, and I don't think they are a lost tribe in that kind of technical sense. The technical sense would be that they're connected with the 10 tribes who were taken into captivity from Palestine some 700 years BC, and who've kind of survived in some remote part of the world ever since. I don't think that's very plausible, and nobody, no scholar would really go along with that. But undoubtedly, there are pockets of Jewish communities in different parts of the world which have lost touch with the rest of Jewry, and some of these are being discovered as we speak, if you like. There have been some very exciting advances in genetics, let's say, or in ways of looking at oral history, which are helping to confirm at least some of the rather fanciful traditions of a number of peoples in the world.
I'm speaking with Tudor Parfit, author of Journey to the Vanished City. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. now with Tudor Parfit, author of The Journey to the Vanished City, The Search for a Lost Tribe of Israel. 10 years ago, he began helping Southern Africa's Lemba people search for their Jewish roots, a search that ultimately led to DNA testing. When we left off, Tudor Parfit was talking about his sojourn in Southern Africa with the Lemba.
After the first part of my journey, I find myself on the east coast of Africa, around about Zanzibar, having learned a great deal about the Lemba, and I suppose having been able to delve quite a long way into what I thought their probable history was, but I certainly hadn't solved the problem of where they had originally come from. And I kind of sat on the coast of the Indian Ocean and, you know, just thought, well, this has been a great deal of fun, but I hadn't really solved that particular problem. And I felt a certain poignancy about that because I'd been specifically asked by, you know, Lemba chief after Lemba chief to go off and find Senna for them if I possibly could. And it seemed to me quite a serious responsibility.
Well, tell us about genetic testing and the Lemba. Before this technology came about, you had already traced the Lemba through evidence as far as Yemen.
Yes, from Zanzibar, I went back to London actually, but then a few months later, I found myself in the Yemen writing another book, and while I was there, through a series of rather idiotic sounding coincidences, I stumbled upon it in the eastern part of the Hadramaut, which is really one of the most remote places in the world. And the kind of evidence was fairly compelling in the sense that many of the tribal names in the eastern end of the Hadramaut are identical with the tribal names of the Lemba. The town in the eastern end of the Hadramaut is called Senna, exactly like the Senna of the Lemba's oral traditions. The mysterious Pusela, they didn't know what it was, if you recall, and they didn't know where it was, may be the Masila. It's a valley which goes from Senna down to the sea. At the bottom of this valley, there was, in medieval times, an extraordinary port called Sahyut, which was the great port of exploration for the Arabs travelling throughout the Indian Ocean and particularly to the east coast of Africa. So this seemed to be quite convincing in a way. Of course, there was no great rock in the eastern Hadramaut, you know, with graffiti on it saying the Lemba were here or anything of that sort. And at this point, it seemed like it would be an extremely good idea to try and test this hypothesis using genetic means. And so then I went back to my Lemba friends and took vast samples of Lemba DNA, as well as a kind of general selection of non-Lemba groups in southern and central Africa, and then we compared those with groups in the Hadramaut.
But there's two separate things going on here. You tested the DNA of the folks back in Hadramaut, but would they have been Jews?
No, what I was interested in doing at this point was to see whether indeed there was any kind of overlap with the general population of South Arabia and particularly the Hadramaut and the general population of the Lemba. That was the point. It was to sort of prove that there was indeed a link with Senna. The whole Jewish thing didn't come into the picture at this point. What I wanted to do was to show that the Lemba did come from outside Africa and that indeed they were from the Hadramaut in South Yemen. So the question then was, would it be possible using genetic means to prove in any way their claims to be of Jewish extraction? Now, given that Jews, people have often converted to Judaism, and that's one of the ways of being a Jew is to convert to Judaism, it didn't seem likely, but anyway, we tried it. And we'd already done a piece of research on the subject of the Jewish priesthood, and we had isolated a particular haplotype, which is a genetic element, and we discovered that the Jewish priesthood, which is, broadly speaking, people called Cohen or similar names, have 55% of such people have got a particular marker which can be traced back to a common ancestor who would have lived approximately, give or take, 700 years BC.
Now, the reason it can be traced back is the priesthood, unlike, for those who wouldn't know, it's not the rabbis. I mean, the priesthood is a hereditary caste, if you will.
Yes, that's right.
Father to son.
Yes, precisely. Among Jews, the status of priesthood is passed from father to son. There's nothing you can do about it. It simply automatically is transmitted to your son. And this works exactly in the same way as the Y chromosome, which is transmitted exactly, you know, whatever you want to do, you can't affect the toss from father to son. And so we discovered that on the Y chromosome, there was a particular element practically unique to priests. And as I said, both among Ashkenazi priests, that is to say the European branch of Jewry, and among the more Oriental branch of Jewry, the Sephardim, the incidence of this particular thing is much the same, about 55%. And we discovered in one of the clans of the Lemba, and indeed a clan which claimed to have in the past some ritual significance and some priestly role, the clan is called the Buba, that precisely the same incidence of this particular haplotype was found.
Now, wait, back up. In other words, among Jews, about 50% of the priesthood carries this, people who believe themselves to be in the priesthood carries this gene. Among lay Jews, non-priests, how many percent?
I can't remember the figure precisely, but let's say between 5 and 10%.
So how unusual would it be to go to Africa and find this in a tribe or a group or a clan in Africa?
Well, one wouldn't expect it. In the general Bantu population that we have typed, it wasn't this haplotype wasn't found, and in a whole range of other human populations that have been typed, it has simply not been found. The only populations where it is to be found in a very, very low, at a very low incidence, is, for instance, in the Greek population, which of course throughout history had a great deal of contact with Jews. So it's there in the background, if you like. But generally speaking, it's simply absent. So it is now being taken as a marker, if you like, of some ancient Israelite population, and it would be hugely useful in the future, you know, with respect to this kind of historical work.
So when the Lemba were tested, and this one group showed a very high percentage of this one DNA marker, and what, the rest also showed group?
Yes, the general Lemba population has got the same incidence of this haplotype as the general Jewish population, and this one clan among the Lemba, the Buba, has got the same incidence as among both the Ashkenazi and the Sephardi members of the, of this ancestral priesthood, inherited priesthood.
So now, what did that mean? How exciting is that for you and for them?
I think that's pretty exciting. I don't think it's not exactly saying, look, this proves that a clan of priests once marched into Central Africa. But what it's certainly saying is that there's been a genetic transmission which is almost certainly Jewish in origin, or probably Jewish in origin, which has gone into Central Africa. And we didn't know before that Jews had ever, in any form, got anywhere near Central Africa. So it kind of changes our sense a bit of what Jewish history is all about. So I think that is very, very exciting. And actually, in different work that we've been doing on some of the Jewish communities in India, we've discovered that there are traces of a southern exodus of the Jewish people. Everybody knows about the northern exodus of the Jews to Europe and the eastern exodus of the Jews to Babylon and the western exodus of the Jews, if you like, as far as the United States and so on. But, you know, historically we didn't know anything about this southern, migration of Jews. And some of the Indian populations that have been tested look to be very, very Jewish populations, or populations that claim some kind of Jewish ancestry, look very, very similar to those of the Lemba.
When this testing was done, and okay, it doesn't prove anything, but how exciting was it for the Lemba? I mean, what did it do for them?
I think that the effect of this research upon the Lemba has been pretty remarkable. The president of South Africa, Mbeki, was in Washington just a few months ago, and he happened to see a television documentary that, that was done on my book and on this work. And when he went back to South Africa, he immediately summoned the Lemba to turn up at the presidential palace. And, of course, that was an extraordinary thing for them. They wrote to me and said that the crown of the Lemba was mine. I was delighted to hear this. And so it's given them a completely different kind of profile in the context of South Africa. Similarly, you know, the DNA evidence has been taken very seriously by many groups of people. There's a Jewish organization called Kulanu in the United States, which has been very interested in helping lost Jewish communities. And as a result of the research, they've taken an interest in the Lemba. And certainly already they're getting the kind of aid which other groups in South Africa aren't getting, and particularly in the educational sphere. And clearly this will impinge hugely upon the Lemba's sense of who they are, where they're going, where they came from, and will, and well, certainly, I'm sure, strengthen their links with Jews throughout the world.
Hmm. Tudor Parfit, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Tudor Parfit is author of Journey to the Vanished City, The Search for a Lost Tribe of Israel. He chairs the Middle East Center at the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London. I'm Renee Montaigne. This is Fresh Air.